the Southside's own Jonathan Hood, weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Blast deep into the night, and a two-run homer for Paez.
We're getting a 13-yard gain here on fourth down, and right now not looking good. Trubisky's going to run it, and he is going to get a first down. How about Trubisky to the 42-yard line? Oh my goodness!
Bentley play action. So Jake Bentley chased. Roquan Smith,
he's the highlight show of this defense.
In the ring, Steamboat's got him up. A slam. McClaren inside Taylor. One, two. He got it. He got it. Steamboat's got him up. And Blair has done it. Blair has done it.
And there it goes. Abreu massacres this ball to left center field.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
What's up and welcome in. Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Hit me up on Twitter, twitter.com, tweetjhood. If you follow me on Twitter, twitter.com, tweetjhood, you saw a young man deciding to climb one of the poles out front here of our State Street Studios for whatever reason. And half naked, by the way, in doing so. That picture is up at tweetjhood at ESPN 1000. Don't know what that was all about, but that's part of working under the hood at night. I've been flashed three times. Twice by women.
It's a good ratio. We'll take two out of three. That's cool.
Because we've had our studios down here. Ryan McGee covers college football like a blanket for ESPN.com, part of Campus Conversations, that podcast. You can be able to hear him there. And also part of the SEC Television Network. He does a show with Marty Smith. So we'll talk to Ryan McGee coming up in a matter of moments here on ESPN 1000. Gary from Bridgeview, he won the first pair of tickets to see Fall Out Boy at Wrigley Field, Saturday, September 8th, this hour, between 9 and 10, we'll hook you up with an opportunity for you to go see Fall Out Boy at Wrigley Field. If you want to go, it's courtesy of Four Winds Casino, your entertainment escape, and, of course, our friends here at Under the Hood, with me, Jonathan Hood, here on ESPN 1000 and ESPN App. Listen closely on how you can win tickets. We'll tell you when to call between now and 10 to see Fall Out Boy at Wrigley Field. All right, 312-332-ESPN is our telephone number. Earlier today, before I came in to do Under the Hood, I worked on my other job, SiriusXM NBA Radio, as I hosted with Tim Legler. You know Legs, don't you? Three-point scoring champion. Guys, can still knock it down, by the way. Even at his age, he can still knock it down. ESPN analyst as well for the NBA. So we were on together, and tomorrow will be the Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield, Massachusetts on NBA TV. And actually, one of the topics that we had, if we had nothing to talk about, I would bring this up on this show. But I will tell you that one of our main topics was talking about two really terrific lead guards that are going into the Hall of Fame tomorrow. We did a topic of Jason Kidd. You can put this on the – matter of fact, you can retweet what I had earlier. You can do that, Eric. Jason Kidd or Steve Nash, who is the better point guard? It was – coast to coast, a lot of people were going back and forth on that because some people really believed in Jason Kidd coming from Cal and Steve Nash coming from Santa Clara, kind of out of nowhere, actually, and had to be coaxed into shooting the basketball more. Don Nelson was like, if you don't shoot the ball more than 10 times, I'm going to fine you. So you can put that on the poll at ESPN 1000 because that was our conversation. Also going into the Hall of Fame will be former Bulls GM Rod Thorne. If you know that name, Rod Thorne has been around the NBA and basketball for over 50 years. But that guy drafted Michael Jordan. He had a choice. You can go Sam Bowie or Michael Jordan. And at the time, in the early 80s, it was unheard of to draft a two-guard and build a team around a two-guard. Like, really? You're going to build a team around a two-guard? And people were laughing, like holding their stomachs, laughing and pointing. How are you going to build a championship without a non-center? because it was all about the big man back then, right? So we had Terry Bors on the program because Terry covered the Bulls in the early days before Jordan and throughout all the championship years of Michael Jordan. And we asked Terry his thoughts about Rod Thorne. I asked him, what does he remember most about the early days of Rod Thorne with the Bulls? And T. Diddley said,
you know, it's funny because the early days when I was covering the Bulls were just bad. I mean, it was just god-awful. And I just remember drafting Quentin Daly. That was my first deal. I mean, they drafted Quentin Daly. For the love of God, they Paul Westhead was the coach. They took him down to Peoria to get away from everybody. He thought that would, get rid of the media spotlight. Well, I'll take him to Peoria. No, well, yeah, people paid attention because women were all protesting every day, Quentin Daly. So it's like this terrible kind of memory that Rod Thorne helped erase with one fell swoop. I mean, you're just kind of waiting for something good to happen for this franchise. And let me just say this about Rod, that I've dealt with a lot of NBA executives, and when Jerry Krause took over in 85, Jerry Krause and I butted heads over everything, just about everything there ever was. But we finally made peace when he was scouting for the Mets in later years, and I realized, and when he went in the Hall of Fame, he deserved it. And I feel the same thing about Rod. And I know I used to kid Rod, and Rod would take whatever you wanted to give him, he'd take. Because I used to tell him, well, you know, I'm, it's great to finally be associated with a Princeton man. Unfortunately, it's Princeton High School. So, I gave him all the grief I could, and Rod always took it. He never took himself too seriously. He was never like, oh, I'm the greatest basketball mind who ever lived, even after taking Michael. It's funny, I see him quoted as saying, I didn't know, exactly what we had after. I remember this distinctly, guys, that after the first practice, Michael's first practice, that Kevin Lockery, who'd been around the NBA forever, and I love it, he's a piece of work. He comes off, and this is the days when they're practicing at Angel Guardian, and he comes off, and you could actually watch practice or see a little bit of practice, and he comes off, and he says, hey, Terry. I said, yeah, what's up? He said, I think we got the greatest basketball player who ever lived. I said, what? He said, yeah, Michael. And I'm going, oh, okay. Because Rod would never say it. If you remember any of this, guys, I know you're both much younger than I am, but he never would say that. I mean, he was kind of not standoffish, but careful about, because I think he didn't want to, what you also love about him is he didn't want to talk about himself all the time. He didn't want to make it about him. Yeah, well, I got him. I mean, he was never that way about Michael. Never. And I mean, I really learned to like him. And the next thing you know, he was gone. He was always around the NBA. We still remain friends and still do, I believe. I don't think we've ever had a cross word. But I remember distinctly that he was very careful, and Kevin Lockery was over the moon. He was crazy. I said, what? I said, one practice? He said, that's all it takes. I said, okay.
One practice?
Tim, maybe you could address that for me. Is that possible?
Terry, take us back then to that time, around the draft. What was the general feeling in Chicago when the selection was made? Can you take us back to what the mindset was in the city?
You know what's interesting about this, and I say this, and it could be because I'm just old and I've lost my mind, but I didn't sense any real excitement about it. When the Bears were at their height. So most people in this town, most sports fans in Chicago were worrying about, well, how are the Bears going to – I mean, the Bears should really be good to you. And I'm going, yeah, I guess. But it just wasn't the excitement about Michael that you would think. The Bulls were not the story. They'd been down several years. There wasn't much going on since they lost, I want to say, the 75 Western Conference Finals to Golden State, Rick Barry's team. And I just didn't sense – nowadays the NBA is 24/7, 365. I mean, it's a never-ending news cycle of fun and things going on and controversy and everything that makes it great. But nothing at that time. It just wasn't the kind of buzz you would thought. When Michael came to town, and I told the story in the book, that when he came to town, they made him available at the old Purple Hotel on Tui up there in Lincolnwood. And I was the only one who showed up. Nobody wanted to see him. I mean, he did his press conference after, but I was told, if you want to come up and say, okay. And I did. I was the only one who wanted to do it. I mean, I don't want to say I was the only one excited in the city, because I'm sure there were actual basketball fans who knew something about it who were excited. But it was the most reserved thing you've ever seen nowadays, because because the Bulls had had so many bad picks. I think people were just kind of immune to it. They just going, okay, yeah, okay, Michael Jordan, yeah, pretty good, but how about these other guys? You know, this, that, and the other stuff. I mean, they were at the point where everything they did was second-guessed. I mean, the Quentin Daly pick hurt a lot, hurt their image, hurt everything about them. Jonathan Coley, who was running the team at the time, wouldn't apologize, wouldn't really cooperate with a lot of things that people wanted to do and get said he wouldn't do it. So, I mean, there was just a lot of not much caring about the Bulls, I guess is the best way I can put it. Now, you know, they sell out to an unbelievably profitable franchise, still riding what Michael did, mm-hmm. I think, but to a certain extent. But it just wasn't what you'd think it would be. I mean, if you got, I don't know who I could, there's no comps to him other than LeBron, who was only going, that's about it.
Yeah.
Of late, where you'd go, oh my God, you got LeBron. Because there's certain guys you're sure of. And I was so positive of Michael. I didn't need Kevin Locker to tell me. I didn't know the greatest of all, and I didn't know any of that. I couldn't. I just listened with my jaw open. And then, what? Really? One practice? Hey, he's killing people.
So Terry Bors with us talking about Rod Thorne going into the Basketball Hall of Fame. You can hear that interview in its entirety after our show is over after 10 o'clock. A lot of great memories about the Bulls and about Rod Thorne, longtime GM with the Chicago Bulls. He's the reason why Jordan came to Chicago. He was with us on SiriusXM NBA Radio. You'll be able to hear that in its entirety after our show is over at 10 o'clock. Let's go back to our hotline and say hello to friend of the program, Ryan McGee, part of that Campus Conversation podcast on ESPNradio.com. Also part of the SEC television, brand new show with Marty Smith. He joins us here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Ryan, Jonathan Hood, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you mentioning the show. Marty and I, we premiered it tonight, and we haven't been canceled yet. So that's a good sign. It aired a couple hours ago, and yeah, we're getting, and you'll be proud to know that we had this guy. We were based out of Charlotte, and when there was this guy in Charlotte, my wife and I saw driving around, driving what he called the dog fanbulance. Mm-hmm. And it's this Georgia fan who bought an ambulance and has completely upfitted it into this Georgia tailgating machine. and we had him. I mean, it's still got the lights and the siren and everything, and we used it as a Burt Reynolds tribute,
mm-hmm.
because of the Cannonball Run, because Burt Reynolds raced an ambulance in the Cannonball Run, and so yeah, it was. But you would have been proud of us. We were rocking the black and red and blasting the siren on the show.
I love that. I do have to ask you a question about Burt Reynolds though, because you brought him up. Iconic figure, obviously. And what guy, especially for our age, what guy didn't want to be Burt Reynolds growing up because he always had someone hot next to him? Clearly, that's number one. But number two, just because he's in a fast race car, because he's running away from the cops, because of how cool he was with that cowboy hat. What are your memories of Burt Reynolds, especially growing up watching those films?
Oh, it's funny. I just recently, just coincidentally, a few months ago, I reread his autobiography, which he wrote 4 or 5 years ago, and he talks in the book about kind of becoming this accidental redneck hero, and that's what he was. You know, honestly, the first kind of grown-up movie that I saw that would have been PG-13 back then, had they had PG-13, was Cannonball Run. That's why I love the movie so much. In fact, tonight before I go to bed, I want to watch it to honor Burt. But for me, and you know this, I'm a NASCAR guy. Mm-hmm. Burt Reynolds co-owned a NASCAR team for years. It was the Skull Bandit, the green 33 car. They should have won the championship in 1984. It was co-owned with Hal Needham, who directed Smokey and the Bandit and directed Cannonball Run and Hooper and all those movies, and was one of probably the greatest stuntman in Hollywood history. And those guys were at the racetrack all the time. And the stories that Burt Reynolds and Hal Needham told me, as is usually the case, their off-the-record stories were way better than the stories that made it into the book. But man, what a time to be alive, to be a stuntman and a movie star in the 60s and 70s and 80s.
Jonathan Hood with Ryan McGee here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN. I'd like to remind you that Chicago's College Tailgate takes place Saturday, 11 o'clock, 11 to 1:30 into Notre Dame and Ball State here on the home of the Irish, ESPN 1000. So Chris Black, Adam Abdallah, and yours truly will have the coverage before Notre Dame takes on Ball State. I will ask you about your blimp issues that you had here. You and Marty Smith were supposed to be up on that blimp. What the heck happened there with those tornadic issues that you had weather-wise?
Yeah. Yeah, listen, I don't know if you've ever been up in Goodyear Blimp. It's awesome. I recommend it. I've done it before. Everybody should do it. But you should never do it when there is cyclonic activity in the Gulf, is what they said. And so the Blimp was in Orlando for the Alabama-Louisville game on Saturday night and was supposed to glide over to Tallahassee. And, yeah, they were going to put Marty and I up in the Blimp, but the weather kept it parked in Orlando. But the action ended up being great because Marty and I, they put us in on a little platform right behind the end zone. And so, I mean, we had literally had the best seats in the house at the Virginia Tech-Florida State game, and we just sat there on ESPN.com and just, you know, talked about whatever we saw, which sometimes was the football game, but Florida State was so bad that after a while we had to find something else to talk about.
But it still worked out either way, which I really liked. I liked
it. Yeah, no, it was a good time. But I tell you this, I will never get in the Blimp when there's a tropical storm in the area. I'll tell you that.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. That's good book learning by you, Ryan McGee, to know that. So as I mentioned, we're going to be on before Notre Dame. We were there in South Bend for game number one. What stood out most about Notre Dame's victory against Michigan, and how far do you think they can go, and especially based on how Winbush performed in that Michigan game?
Yeah, well, I'm with you, and it's funny because, you know, now we're all kind of doing retroactive rearview mirror, what should we have been talking about? And I've said this to several people the week leading into the game. I mean, I wrote a Jim Harbaugh column. I think everybody wrote a Jim Harbaugh column. Marty, you're talking about Marty. Marty went up there and interviewed him for game day. And so we were all talking about Michigan. Nobody was talking about Notre Dame, at least not outside of your area. And I think that's exactly how Brian Kelly wanted it. And so the reality is that all these programs that we talked about going into the opening weekend, and I put Florida State in that group, I certainly put Michigan in that group, there's big glaring issues. And I think if you're Notre Dame, you know, you just motored along. And, you know, reminded me a lot of what LSU did. Reminded me a lot of what I watched Virginia Tech do on Monday night. I saw West Virginia on Saturday, same thing. Just, you know what, let everybody talk about everyone else, and we're just going to quietly take care of our business. So I'm with you. I think that Notre Dame has a lot to and listen, the schedule is made, as Notre Dame's schedule will always be. If you take care of your business with that calendar, then you will be in the playoff. I really believe that at the end of the year. And so I think that they're certainly in a position to stay in that conversation for a while yet.
Clemson on the road against Texas A&M at 6 o'clock. Central time. How close do you feel Clemson is to Alabama at this point?
I think they're probably the only ones in the same zip code right now. I think that Georgia's the closest of anyone else, but Clemson is just so good defensively. And, you know, their only question mark was which one of these awesome quarterbacks are we going to, you know, put in as a starter. So I just think that if you look at what they've done recruiting-wise, the only three schools that have recruited at the level of Alabama, it's Alabama, Clemson, and Georgia. And, you know, Kel Sapriese, those three are all in everybody's, you know, playoff conversation. So I think that what Clemson has done, and it's interesting because I kind of realized this for the first time standing with Jimbo Fisher. I was sent down for signing day a couple years in a row to Florida State, and I was standing there with Jimbo, and we're getting ready to do TV or whatever, and Jimbo looked at me and he goes, man, can you believe what they're doing at Clemson right now? And they were coming into Florida State's backyard and coming into Georgia's backyard and taking people. And they're dominating North Carolina. And so it's just – they're just recruiting at a level no one else is right now except for Alabama. And as a result, you know, they're 2-3 deep at a lot of positions. So I think they're the only ones that are set up right now. But I think that Georgia long-term is certainly going to be right there. But I think if we're talking about 2018, I think Clemson's the only one in Alabama's rearview mirror right now.
I said something, I'm glad I haven't gotten it suspended yet for saying it, but I did kind of say out loud on the air, maybe the company, the mothership, might want reparations for that Longhorn Network because it is just – and I've said it twice.
No, you're right. No, listen, I've had those conversations with the people that work there, and bless their hearts. You know, I told them, I said, it reminds me of you again, covering auto racing. There's always the handful of PR people that have to figure out how to write a positive press release after finishing 29th for the Texas race, you know? And so that's kind of where Texas is. And, you know, and I'll be serious. The brand name matters to people. I get that. we all know what preseason polls actually mean. I don't have a problem with them. But I really wanted to have an intervention with the people who voted Texas into their top 25. And there they sat going into the year. And I, you know, I think one day they could be good again. But, you know, if you look and see what they've done, they're like Michigan. They're like Texas. You know, or they're like Tennessee. You know, they're like these programs that just kind of can't get out of their own way. And Texas has been like that for 10 years. So at some point, you kind of have to say, do we really believe? And until they prove to me that there's a reason to believe, I'm just not going to.
And I know that already if you go to any Longhorn message board, it's already, you know, the fire-wielding torches going after Tom Herman. That's not on him because this is something that has to be – that's going to have to get fixed for the long term. Tom Herman did a great job in Houston. Anytime that you can keep so many of your kids in that Houston, Beaumont, Eastern Texas area and they come to play for you and you flourish – you know that Tom Herman can coach and he can recruit, but this is going to be a long-term thing again for them, will it not?
Yeah, and I think that the problem that he's running into is not dissimilar to what Notre Dame ran into for a long time, which is, you know, the Golden Dome and Rudy and Joe Montana, that means nothing to a 17-year-old. And when it's been a decade since you've been in the national championship conversation, that doesn't matter. I mean, listen, you know this, I'm a Tennessee alum, and the problem with Tennessee is right now, Jason Witten's retired now. Peyton Manning's been retired several years. And if you haven't been good for 10 years, and kids don't think of you of what you did in 1998 or what you did in 1958. And so they just don't care. And so in Texas's case, Texas has a Texas A&M problem, and they have an LSU problem. They have a Houston problem. They have a TCU problem. You know, schools aren't scared of them anymore as far as recruiting. And honestly, kids, they don't care about Ricky Williams. They don't care about Vince Young. It's been a while. You know, they were 4 and 5 years old then. So you have to build not just your roster, but you have to build back the brand. And it's crazy to think about that. But I think if you're of a certain age, Texas football is still a really big deal. But if you're of a younger age, I think they're just another program in the eyes of a lot of those kids.
Ryan McGee from ESPN.com, Campus Conversation Podcast. Wherever you download your podcast, download that support. I come to find out, I kind of knew this the last couple of years, there isn't that many great college football podcasts, but that one is a great college football podcast.
Well, thank you, sir. We appreciate it.
Also, the SEC television. Check out Marty Smith and Ryan McGee on SEC television. Got that DVR, so I look forward to seeing that when I get home tonight. So my partner one of my partners on the show is a Alabama fan, and with me being a Georgia fan, and I said on the show after, you know, during our week one broadcast, I said, you know, Georgia's going to play South Carolina. And I said, I'm a little bit afraid. He goes, boy, you still got that scalded dog, you know, Mark Richt in you. He goes, you know, Mark Richt doesn't coach a team anymore. I said, I can't help it. I'm still a bit afraid of this matchup. Not necessarily a trap game, just much as it is just like I know what Georgia can do, but I also know that this could be the rock in the shoe for the Bulldogs as well. How do you see this matchup with Georgia and South Carolina?
Yeah, listen, Georgia's better. I mean, there's no question about that. But as you know better than most, the history of Georgia football, whether it was during the SEC days or prior to that, there have been a lot of years where Georgia was going to be really good, and they play South Carolina historically very early. And like I say, this even predates, you know, the Southeastern Conference days when they were both in the conference, and they trip over that. They just do. And listen, we talking about Marty and McGee, we just had Will Muschamp on Marty and McGee, the television show, tonight, and I can tell you right now, he ain't intimidated. And you know, he went to Georgia. I mean, he's not scared. And what he has done at South Carolina is really remarkable. I don't think people understand how bad it had gotten at the very end under Spurrier, and particularly when Spurrier, you know, cut and ran on that team before the season was over with in his last year. And it really created a problem. And it really created a morale problem. Guys transferred out. Recruits bailed. And so for Will Muschamp to be winning games as quickly as he has turned that program around, it's really incredible. And so, yeah, no, you are 100% justified in being worried about that game on Saturday. I think Georgia wins, but I think it's going to be a very difficult day at a very difficult place to play.
Still scared from the Richt years. Still afraid.
Oh, yeah, no, listen, man, it is what it is. I mean, I mentioned, you know this, I went to Tennessee.
Right.
There's there's just, you know, if you're of a certain age, you just assume something's going to go wrong in particular games. And in that case, that's you were absolutely justified to feel that way.
All right, Ryan, last thing. Any flack from your bottom 10? Because you are Mr. Bottom 10. So any flack so far?
Yeah, I mean, the Texas people obviously aren't happy. They're not. So we have the coveted fifth spot, which is not actually the fifth worst team in the country. But, you know, going all the way back when Steve Harvey wrote this as a syndicated column 30 years ago, you know, and we always apologize to Steve Harvey in our intro. We always plug in a team that had a bad weekend. So Texas is at five. Unfortunately, they should be used to this because I think the last 3 years in a row they've started the year in that fifth spot. And when you lose to Maryland to start off every season, you're certainly going to do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the angriest people this year, Liberty University, the Jerry Falwell Christian University, the nastiest tweets I have received this year.
Wow.
Were when I had the Liberty Flames, this is their inaugural FBS season, when I had them in the preseason bottom 10, I got some very un-Christian emails and tweets from Lynchburg, Virginia. But they're out of there now. They beat Old Dominion, and they're out of the bottom 10 now, so hopefully I'm headed to the good place instead of the bad place when I die.
What's scary about this, I saw some of that game, like a sketchy Raycom Jefferson Pilot, yeah. not HD. It was some kind of broadcast.
Like two guys with the VHS camera. Oh yeah, no, totally. But they're very quick to let me this. Like I said, it's their first year. They're an FBS independent. And they're very quick to let me know they beat Old Dominion. So congratulations, and I have a feeling we'll probably see them again before the year's over.
Ryan, as always, I appreciate your time in Chicago. Thanks so much.
Anytime, brother. Thanks.
It is Ryan McGee with us here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Throwback Thursday. Is next.
From your hood to J hood. On ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
It's the Cubs. It's the Nationals. At National Park, here is Jesse Rogers with a report. Jess?
All right, Jay Hood. We are tied 4-4, bottom nine. Tight game here as the Nationals are looking for a walk-off. The Cubs tied it in the eighth, Almora and Bryant with base hits. Eventually, Bryant scores on a ground out by Wilson Contreras. But Justin Wilson, the pitcher, just got out of a big jam in the bottom of the eighth inning as he came into the game second and third. Carl Edwards once again losing control, walked a guy, gave up a double. Here comes Justin Wilson to face two righties. He strikes out Mark Reynolds and then gets a fly out to end the inning. So a huge moment for Justin Wilson no matter what happens the rest of the way. Cubs led this game 2-0, but then have trailed since. A two-run homer by Mark Reynolds earlier put the Nats on top 3-2. Eventually it was 3-3, then 4-3, and now again the Cubs tying it in the eighth, but the Nats are batting in the bottom of the ninth. We are tied at four. Back to you.
All right, Jesse, thank you. Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Glad that you're with us. We're going to give out tickets to see Fall Out Boy, as well as Rise Against at Wrigley Field on Saturday, September 8th, courtesy of Four Winds Casino, your entertainment escape. Stay with us and advice how you can win tickets. If you don't call unless you can go, we're going to hook you up with tickets if you want to go. It's our way of saying thanks for listening to Under the Hood with me, Jonathan Hood, here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Well, you know it's Thursday, right? Let me check the calendar. Yes, it's Thursday. So that means we got to throw it back with a edition of Throwback Thursday.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Before Snapchat.
What is that?
Before Twitter.
So what's the sitch?
There was.
You left.
Yeah.
That's so throwback.
That was for the good times.
That's so throwback.
ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Throwback Thursday memories.
I see a little silhouette of a man.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Put your hands up.
The throwback.
All you need is love.
The throwback. Taking it back.
Go back.
The throwback.
The throwback. Throwback.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Let's go back.
Throwback Thursday! Jonathan! Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Oof. Dug deep there. It's like flame season.
All right. From downtown.
Swoosh.
I hurt myself. Oof. Jonathan Hood here on ESPN 1000 at the ESPN app. Throwback Thursday. Oh, my. We love Throwback Thursday because we always got a great question for you. And for those that want those full-out boy tickets, it's your time to call because you got to give us a story. 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776. The best one with the story that we're going to ask for, you can win these tickets this half hour. Our question on the table for Throwback Thursday is
the throwback.
What was your first alcoholic drink? How old were you? What was your first reaction to drinking it? Very simple, right? My first drink was when I was 8 years old. See, with the Hoods, the Hood household, there was parties every Friday and every Saturday night. And of course, Saturday would go into Sunday because no one was sober enough to go home, so it'd just be a whole bunch of uncles and cousins around the house in the basement, and my grandmother would make breakfast the next day. So it would just be like a 2.5 to 3 day party almost every weekend when I was a kid.
Sounds terrific.
That's how it was.
That's
like,
right.
Like no, nothing like. People knew that they couldn't park in front of their house because there was all of my cousins and uncles and everybody else, aunts, and they knew there was a party at the house when the Hoods or in town. And so there's nothing like when you're a kid and you see all these empty cans and open liquor around and you're just like, what is the big fascination with all this brown
why
liquor?
Why do all these adults love this?
So I guess the first drink was like a half can of Old Style.
There you go. Mine's super similar. And I don't remember this. This is a story my dad has told me. And it was, he was drinking an Old Style. He went to go let the dog out the back door, and he came back to like 4-year-old me with two hands on the beer can, just upside down drinking it. Apparently, I detested it, and my dad was kind of upset. He's like, I chugged about half a beer in like 20 seconds. It was just gave him total bitter beer face after.
I mean, I did it because I was just being, a bad kid and just curious, and no one was around, so it was just like, yeah.
I'm sure mine was, I just want to be like daddy, like daddy drinks this, so I want to drink this. So that's that one.
Felix, what was your first encounter with the chalice and the wine?
I was actually 15 years old. I remember I lived in Florida.
Yeah.
And I was working for AMC at the time. And I remember my manager, she was like 21. She was like hanging out with a whole bunch of college people and invited me to go to this party. I tried drink vodka, and they made a screwdriver for me, and I remember I had like 3 or 4 of those and forgot what happened.
Yeah, right? That'll happen.
Nice red cup, too,
I think my first time, and of course, my family's from Arkansas, so, and so is JD's, by the way, which is really fascinating.
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah, you shake a few trees in my family, and you'll see liquor bottles falling out of it.
Yeah.
So, it's JD's joke, actually. So, but, yeah, so a lot of... a lot of Old Foster 100 around the house. A ton of it. A lot of Old Taylor. That's the old Ray Flores story, by the way, of Ray Flores. Oh, you can't drink me under the table. And we went to Elephant Cafe, and he was, we had to pour him into a cab.
I was going to say, I can see Ray being the guy. He's great. Like, he's obnoxious to begin with. I mean, like, 4 beers in, he's probably, like, sorority girl obnoxious. And then 8 in, he's done.
What was your first drink? 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776. Steve Aaron says Southern Comfort when he was 18.
You're gonna spend your life, girl, working 9 to 5. Let me take you away from it all.
Give me a comfort shot.
I know just a spot.
A comfort shot.
New Orleans next stop.
Southern Comfort, when he was 18, he was a freshman at DePaul, and it tasted like candy going down. The next morning, I thought death was imminent. I swallowed 5 aspirin dry because my skull was on fire and the projectile vomit for several hours and became reacquainted with meals from the previous week. Steve Arendt is Southern Comfort.
SoCo Lime was a high school staple for us, and I don't think after high school, I don't think I've touched it since. Like, I've been so grossed out by it, but that was a high school go-to for us.
Oh, my God. Mike Brunsting says, Windsor Canadian, Windsor Cokes until we ran out of Coke, and I woke up in a puddle of vomit on the bathroom floor. I was 18. Windsor Canadian, that is rough.
I don't even know what it is.
No, it's Canadian whiskey.
Whiskey, I would assume.
Rough. Yeah. Rough. My cousin Wiley says old style because he's part of my family, so absolutely he would know. Old style, I was about 4 or 5, and I took a big sip of a can that was left out overnight, woke up my brother out of his sleep so he can give it a try, too. He passed. He passed on it. Oh, gosh. So many different. Mark says a little Wild Irish Rose.
Practice. Practice till it can't get any smoother. That's what it takes to be the best in your class. But when you finally got it all together, when your heart and your hands win everybody over, there's nothing sweeter. Wild Irish Rose knows that feeling. We've been the best in our class for over 30 years.
Pick the winner, pick the rose, pick the one everybody knows.
Hot sax.
Yeah. No, in the commercial, there's two guys like sax dueling. I know. Pardon the expression.
Yes, they were. These commercials back in the day, man. Yes. It's like, wow. Ernest Brooks says, I was about 9. My grandma gave me a quarter of Miller beer. It was delicious. Courtney Cross from St. Louis says, as it was told to me, my first drink of beer was when I was 9 to 10 months old. That's how I learned how to walk.
Walk to mommy's vodka.
There's a couple of these purple passions, which I'm not familiar with, but Eddie Johnson, also Lisa Kelly, talks about purple passion.
What can improve the taste of a juicy Texas sirloin steak or the scintillating freshness of a California seafood salad? Hey. Only one thing, a cold glass of Spagnata. The pure natural flavors in this delicious red wine actually bring out the best in these special dishes. New Mexico tacos, Hawaiian fresh fruit salad, or any dish. Only one thing makes them taste better. Spagnata. Try Spagnata.
Spagnata.
What?
Sounds tasty.
Anything that stands out on this Facebook wall, Facebook.com, because there's a ton of selections.
I just looked up what the Purple Passion, made by Everclear. Purple Passion is a great malt beverage.
Adam Delavitt chimes in and says, Everclear, yeah. High school, Everclear, oh my God, Everclear. So, which is great. Our program director, his first drink was Everclear.
I see a couple, I feel like I see a lot of old style and a lot of PBR.
When man was first trying out his wings, Pabst Blue Ribbon Beer was there. Blue Ribbon was brewed for men who really like beer. Pabst is the only beer in America with good old-time flavor because it's still brewed the old-time premium way.
Uh-huh.
Original Pabst Blue Ribbon beer, brewed by the first of the great Milwaukee brewers.
All right.
And it still tastes terrible.
But it's cheap, though.
I love how, this was great, but I love how the commercial's like, finally crafted from the springs of Milwaukee. Like, nope.
See how quaint and how nice those commercials
they were?
Yes,
they were.
The music and everything.
I will say this, Jonathan. Most of these commercials are recorded, all white people. All white people in them. There is no diversity in these old commercials.
Until you get to the Thunderbird commercial from 1977.
Let's shake them up together.
Shake them up? What's that?
That's a great new taste of ice cold Thunderbird. Hello. With grapefruit juice. Just pour the juice in the bottle and...
Shake them up, shake them up, shake them up. Thunderbird and grapefruit juice. Shake them up.
That's a shake them up.
Wow, totally together.
Thunderbird and grapefruit juice, shake them up.
Now you get some.
Thunderbird and grapefruit juice, shake them up.
It's funky. I liked it.
All white people until you get to the Thunderbird.
And then you hear how good that one was. The beat was moving. Like, it was such a better sounding commercial.
Kevin Davies says, oh, he was all about that Boone's Farm and that strawberry duck.
Hello, young lover.
Uh-oh.
Won't you try some good cold Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill?
Oh, yeah, nice. Great.
Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill. It captures the taste of fresh strawberries. Now, doesn't that wine taste good?
You're right, Grandma.
Delicious.
Where'd you go?
Look, she left the Strawberry Hill.
One sip, and it's Strawberry Hill forever.
That was not a five-year-old child. That was a grandma with a couple under a tree.
I can't get over since you pointed that out. Like, it is a grandma that peeps out from this behind the tree as this couple's at a picnic and goes, good morning, lovers. No one over the old 60, call me a lover, please. Don't do that.
70s, man.
Yeah, I know.
70s. So bizarre.
I see this one, and these just came back out, and I've never had them. Have you had a Zima before? Bob Pollard says, Zima, freshman year in college, 17 years old, at a sorority party with a girl I met a few weeks prior. Yeah, I was pretty hardcore, he says.
Yeah, Zima was light. That was too light for me.
It's back, too. Like, it's back at the stores now. I'm still yet to have one, though.
Brown liquor guy, because that's how I grew up.
Me too,
up.
And to be honest. I don't really do vodka, and I think, like, I'm sticking to whiskey, scotch, and then beer.
Honest to God, I don't remember when I had last time I had a vodka.
This weekend, I had a lot of, we went to a cookout and like vodka, they had like these vodka drinks and we drank a lot of vodka and I was so hungover Sunday from drinking something I haven't drank in a while. It was a terrible day.
I try to keep it smooth with the Crown and, but the hard liquor too, like this weekend is going to be, after the college show on Saturday, it's going to be some hard brown liquor.
I got a wedding for one of my best friends Saturday night, so it's going to be a long, fun night. We already have a bottle service reserved for us for after the wedding at a club down here. It's going to be a good night.
I was 16 or 17, says Ken. My buddy's sister was a waitress at a bar. We got in and started drinking whiskey sours. We left and I went over to take a leak on a waist-high sign. I passed out and hit my face on the sign. Woke up on the hood of the car with people asking me if I was okay. Ken Liddell. George, or I should say Jax says that first day freshman year dorm mate had a fake ID. Asked me what I wanted. Having never drank before, I only said I only know Jack Daniels. He got a 2-liter, poured it out, filled the rest with Jack, and he drank 2/3 of that thing. You know, you'd think that Jax could be able to write, not only be a broadcaster, but also write. This sounds like talk to text. It sounds awful.
It may be, let's be honest. He voice tracked his Facebook post.
It's so bad. It's so poorly written. But I get the point. Okay. Man, so many good ones on here. Okay, what's your best story? Call us now, 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776. Last one, CJ says, I was 8 or 9. I took a sip of my Pop's Bacardi. It burned my mouth. It took 3 glasses of ice water to stop the burning. I think my official first drink when I was 19, I had a Bartles and James wine cooler. Oh, my. Oh, my. Hardcore with the Bartles and James. Call in with your favorite drink story. You can probably go see Fallout Boy. Throwback Thursday.
Let's throwback.
Yeah. Hit the button. There you go.
Hey, yo, Jay Hood. You know nobody covers the sports like you do, man. Let's go.
Okay. Man, so funny. Lisa says that she was on a double date. She was 14. Coors Beer. Which is just amazing. Ah, so many good ones. Desmond says, Mad Dog 2020 on the train tracks at near Altgeld Gardens. Red Dog, I was 16. It was gross, from Tim. And Paul Forth, who really tips it in, he says, Red Dog, I was 16. It was gross. No, Paul Forth says, 15, warm gin and vomit. That's it. That's it. So here's what I think. I think the Bears are going to fall short against Green Bay on Sunday. Gave the score earlier. I think I said 23-13, I believe I said earlier. When I look at the NFL, the AFC champion is going to be the New England Patriots again. I know people like the Steelers. They like the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think the Patriots will win again. In the NFC champion will be the Minnesota Vikings. I think that because of the addition of Kirk Cousins, I think that's going to push them over the hump. And so I like the Vikings in the NFC. And I like the Vikings to win the Super Bowl.
I think
the Vikings are going to the Super Bowl. I know people like Atlanta. They like the New Orleans Saints or the Rams. I think that the Vikings out of the NFC North are going to win the Super Bowl to put even more pressure on the Bears. AFC East champions, Patriots. AFC North champion, Steelers. AFC South champion, Jags. That's kind of where I'm going right now with this. In the West, I think it's going to be the Chargers. So that's how I look at the NFL for this upcoming season. And we thank, and again, I mentioned 6 wins for the Bears as a base. We thank you for listening and being part of the program here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Jason from Highland Park won the tickets to see Fall Out Boy. Our thanks to Shanola Hampton, Terry Boers, Leroy Butler, and Ryan McGee. Show produced by Eric and Felix on the other side of the glass. Chicago's College Tailgate, Saturday, 11 to 1:30 with Chris Bleck, Adam Abdallah, and yours truly. Tune in after Murph and Fred on Saturday right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000.